Hi, my name is Krista Bender, and you are listening to Tech Chaos on Rave Radio. Thank you for tuning in if you are a repeat listener. If this is your first time, I hope that you enjoy what you hear. Tonight, I have two guests on the show with me, and we are going to be discussing technology, wearables, apps for wearables, and a little bit of anything else that pops up. But before we get to the guests, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Ingram Micro. Visit their website, which is ingrammicro.com, to find out how they can help you with your AV and IT needs. So if you're familiar with the AV industry, which you probably are if you're listening to me, then you know my first guest, or you should know my first guest, and that is Alicia Headley. Hello, Alicia.
Hello, hello.
And please tell me I said your name right.
Yes,
you said. Woohoo! Awesome. So, Alicia, if you don't know Alicia, she is the smooth factor on Twitter, and that's why I say you should know her, because she is out and about tweeting, which we will talk about in a bit. She is always active on the Twitterverse, and she's representing some of the millennials out there.
Yes, we're next in line.
So the next guest that I have on the show is Joshua Davidson. Hi, Josh. Or do you like Josh, or is it Joshua?
I usually tell people, as long as I recognize it, I don't care. So you can use the letter J, or like pronouncing it like J. Now, if as long as I recognize it, it's like a dog, I'm good.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on the show. You are my outlier tonight, as you are
that's
with
what I love. I love being undervalued.
Yes, that's good. Underdog. You are, you know what, let's roll into you then, and let's explain a little bit about yourself. You work for and started a company called ChopDog, and why don't you give us a little bit of background on your company?
Yeah, so to answer everyone's question under mine, no, I do not run a pet store or have anything dog related. The real answer is my company, we help build startups for non-technical entrepreneurs of technical ideas. We help bring their mobile apps, their web apps, their software, their brands, their products to life. Unlike a development firm, how our business model works, we do all facets, helping them from building their brand, their narrative, their marketing strategy, raising money for VCs, for Series A's, Series B's, actually getting on podcasts like this, media interviews, narratives, all that kind of fun stuff, all under one wheelhouse, which is now, we're just about 7 years old. Yeah. On August 1st will be your 7th anniversary. So we're past kind of that infant startup stage, I guess you can say.
Woo, congratulations.
Yeah, it's fun. I consider us now the awkward teenage years where, you know, you have pimples, your voice breaks, but you know your potential. So, but you know you survived childhood, so you're going to probably live for a while. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
That's very exciting. I didn't realize that you have been around for 7 years. And why don't you tell the listeners where you're located, and is it your only brick and mortar location? Do you have brick and mortar locations?
So actually, I am personally based in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia.
Whoop, whoop.
I grew up in Jersey, so right over to Ben Franklin. But you know, I've been living in Philly now for over almost a year. I've been spending so much time in this incredibly underrated city, kind of my theme, my mantra, my life, underrated, undervalued. As for my team, all my team is all throughout the United States. So we are a completely remote-based operation, even though they are a team. I don't have an outsourced team in India, Pakistan, China. Literally, we're the same people arguing about football during football season, working face-to-face, using Slack, webcam. I actually speak on the side. In fact, in May, I'll be at a conference for the largest IT conference in the country at Interops, speaking at a panel 30 under 30, discussing about how we are a completely remote-based operation with 22 team members and 160 clients worldwide. Yet we don't work face-to-face. So it's something that intrigues a lot of people for sure.
You know, that's something that is pretty big within the industry that Alicia and I are a part of, is a lot of our customers need to be able to work remotely and interact with each other, whether they're sort of like you, where there's really no house to go home to, or if there is like a headquarters, but they're located on West Coast and they decided they need East Coast representation.
Well, one of the things is this, right? Most of our clients are all over the world. We're not like centralized with Philadelphia clients. So I love working with people face to face. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we launched a customer from Bangkok, Thailand. And earlier today, literally right before this podcast interview, I was getting done a call with someone in London. So to be frank, having a remote operation is such an asset for us, because we are working for clients remotely too. So having an infrastructure in place early allows us to be more flexible versus the company that is forced to be in brick and mortar 9 to 5 when we're working remote. And as well, it's 2016. So, you know, pardon my French here, but if your business operation depends on you being a brick and mortar, there's something seriously fucking wrong. This is just the truth. The idea here is that I should be able to work when I want, when I'm most efficient, when get the most output, and you should be able to hire people without needing to micromanage them, hire A-plus players. And since we're built also in this remote atmosphere, I'm able to cut costs a little bit, which then goes to our customers for giving better price point. We don't pay for a 40,000 square foot warehouse, right? We're not paying those absurd taxes and things that come with that and that nature and insurance. So what happens too is, you know, anyone that's even trying to offer the same amount of value, which we do, which to be frank, we are better than any of our competitors that we know, hands down. They can't even match us in our pricing. We'll end up coming $10, $15, $20, $30, $40,000 cost less than them because of the fact that we also have this advantage, this home field advantage of being a remote-based operation. So it's a lot of things. I can go on for hours about it, but one of the reasons why I think remote is highly undervalued in 10 years from now, most companies are going to be like, why the hell did we not get remote sooner?
So then for you, obviously, because you know, you've been around for now 7 years, technology has changed and allowed you to keep up with, you know, being remote and having people everywhere. So how, I'm assuming then either yourself or you have other coworkers that are keeping up on the latest technology trends so that you can keep abreast of it?
Well, keep in mind, we've been remote since we started. I hired my first employee within 6 months of starting my company almost 7 years ago. So back then, literally your only solutions was we were using these like TeamSpeak instead of Slack. Like that was one thing we were doing differently back then. A lot more email. Like now the only time we use email is for talking to customers, media, things like that. If it's anything internal, email's like the worst thing ever. It's the devil. You know, we're talking on Slack or we're getting on a phone call or we'll use Google Hangouts. Google Hangouts is how we have all our client meetings, how we have all our internal meetings. We literally have set up subdomains on our server. Like, for example, it's public knowledge for any of our clients. You literally type in the word hangout.chopdog.com, meeting.chopdog.com, or conference.chopdog.com. It's going to go to unique Google Hangout URLs that all of us know which one's available, which one's not. It's easy for clients to remember. So we're definitely more advanced now there's more tools than ever before for having a remote operation. Back 7 years ago, it was a little bit more hard-coded, like roughing it. So, but again, if we mastered it back then, now everything, we're just even more optimized versus the company, which is trying to figure it out now in 2016.
So, Alicia, you now know that Joshua and I are representing the city of brotherly love. Give us a little insight of where you're located in the country and a little bit of information of how you got into the AV industry and what you're currently doing within the industry.
Well, I am located in Houston, Texas. I'm originally from the East Coast in Connecticut, so I wasn't too far from you guys at one point. And I got into AV through worship centers. I started young at an age of 12. My father, he taught me how to run audio. We had like five people in our church and we didn't have any musicians. So me and my dad, we would just do crazy things with technology to create that, you know, that experience for our worshipers and stuff like that. Then eventually I moved to Houston later on in life. I went to school because nobody knew me here. So that was the next step. And try and take it to another level since nobody knew my experience. And after school, I started freelancing, mostly in worship centers. And I was just like, let's see what else I can do with this. And then that's when I found the AV industry outside of churches. And that was awesome. So I was like, wow, this is cool. Because I can take my love for music, my love for video, my love for audio, and put it all in this one platform and create these awesome experiences for people. So that is what drew me to the industry. Currently, I'm an AV operator. I'm an A1 at the Berry Center for the Cypher ISD School District. We're the third largest district in Texas, and our facility is the third largest district facility for stadium football games, arena conferences and concerts, theater, and all that fun stuff. I really enjoy it because one day I can be doing a audio and visuals for a theater setting, and the next day I can be doing audio for a band out on the stadium. So it's really fun being able to switch between different venues in one place.
Awesome. And I want to say congratulations to you because recently you started blogging for soundgirls.org. So explain a little bit. Are you more integrated with soundgirls.org, or is it just that you happen to stumble across it, say, hey, let me be a blogger, or have you been more active in that organization and then decided you wanted to help be a voice for them?
Well, thank you so much. It's a new venture as far as the blogging. I just started blogging late 2015, and I had been a member of the platform for over 2 years, and I was just kind of in the background because we didn't have a local chapter here in Texas. So I was just kind of in the background watching what they were doing in LA and St. Louis and just grasping the whole thing because I thought it was an awesome experience. And I guest blog for AV Nation. And once that blog went live about you and Ruth, that thing just, it blew up pretty fast. Once that post went live, people saw it and they were like, well, hey, do you want to guest blog for this? Do you want to guest blog for this? I actually turned down a lot of guest blogging opportunities because I just wasn't ready. And Sound Girls was definitely a platform that I did want to be involved with. So they were actually the only platform other than AV Nation that I decided to do guest blogging with.
I will add this. We started seriously blogging, doing content marketing in that regard, and about like mid-2015, and the exponential growth us as a company from it and my own personal brand is insane. Like, the consistency, as long as you're consistent, produce real value, holy crap at the potential it's going to bring you and what you're doing. I mean, we've gone from basically we'll have about 10 to 20 individuals reach out to us a month to work with them to we're over 100 a month right now, all for the blog. And now we're forming partnerships with major publications to redistribute our content. And we introduce a podcast and we'll siphon content from the podcast and go in more detail on our blog too. So it's incredible how much of an asset getting in the blog and how much of a voice it gives you.
It really was amazing. Like, I back you on that. It was like, I did my first post on my, and I don't even have a website. I started all this on the LinkedIn platform because they have that great publishing platform that they came up with. So I started writing on there, and then people were like, hey, you want to write this? You want to write this?
Have you used Medium yet?
I have not used Medium.
Medium is even better than LinkedIn for awareness because you can put in specific keywords and they'll pick it up on certain publications. So LinkedIn's been on or off for me. Sometimes I'm sure you probably see it where it just blows up, and sometimes it's like, why is 20 people read it? Medium has a consistent following for me, and people will get push notifications right to your phone every time you submit it and they follow you. It's basically Twitter for blogger. Like, that's kind of what it is. Highly recommend it. Odds are if you're doing it once, twice a week, the amount of consistency you're going to grow over the course of a calendar year, you're going to be mind-boggled, because that's how we are right now.
You are speaking my language, Joshua, because I love Twitter. That's like my favorite social media. So if I can like combine that with something else.
Well, keep in mind, Medium was founded by a founder of Twitter.
Right. So that's the cool thing about it. Mm-hmm. I read a ton of blogs on there, but I haven't actually created a blog.
Well, it actually connects with your Twitter account, which is really cool. It's like a complimentary piece. So it uses your Twitter username. It's going feed in there. Everyone you follow on Twitter is automatically going to be followed on Medium. That's a Medium account. When they sign up, they're going to follow you. Such an asset. And here's what I recommend you do. Redistribute content over time. You write for one place, a couple months later, as long as it's still relevant, share that content again on another platform and then another platform. I'm always recycling content. If you go on our blog, there's probably about 200-300 articles we've now wrote, and I'm always cycling them all throughout different platforms. And sometimes I'll tweak them because there's different platforms require a different kind of narrative, right? LinkedIn's not going to be the same thing necessarily as a Medium as it would maybe your authentic blog, and also understanding your audience, right? Medium might not be as heavily focused in AV, for example, right? Than an AV-only blog, but it might be more generic and open, which is going to be great for more of an entry-level audience and trying to win them into, you know, the industry, into the keywords. So you have to also look at it that way.
That sounds awesome.
I know. That is really fantastic. Since we're talking social media platforms, then, I want to hear from both of you, what's, like, your top three favorite? So I already said Twitter is my favorite. I use Twitter all the time. I guess, well, now I probably Medium is going to end up being my second favorite, but I do play around with LinkedIn. I really hate Facebook, but I'm on Facebook because that's where friends and family are. Like, I'm so done with Facebook, but I just have to be a part of it. I really actually enjoy Tumblr as well.
So hands down, Twitter's always been my favorite, though Twitter's starting to lose a little bit of its power for me as far as a brand recognition and be able to spread content, find following. But Twitter's still my favorite, hands down, right now. Snapchat is now my second. The idea of a personal narrative, having people like have an intimate look of your lifestyle, I'll use it all the time to put out more behind the scenes as being an entrepreneur, like going meetings, traveling. For example, 2 weeks ago, I had in one day, started the morning in San Jose, California, middle of the day was in Chicago, ended the day in Philly, all meetings in all three cities in one 24-hour block. And it went from 78 degrees to 18 degrees to 40 degrees. I had it all on Snapchat. Like, that's incredible narrative. Third is tough. I'm torn. Instagram, potentially. But at the same point in time, I can't necessarily consider Medium a social network because you're not using it as the purpose of a traditional social network as much as a distribution platform for producing great content. So I'm going to probably lean towards Instagram, though. I think people undervalue now Facebook because they had that bad rep for a while, getting a lot of crap. But Facebook, because of dark posts and advertising, can be such an effective tool. I would never recommend to sleep on because Facebook's not going anywhere anytime soon. There's other social networks like Twitter is going to die more likely than Facebook would ever die. So I would not sleep on it.
Yeah, I would agree. Facebook, unfortunately, has the reach that they were probably not initially thinking it would have, but it's huge. It's everywhere. I mean,
it's the driver's license of the internet. That's how I describe Facebook now, where everyone has a Facebook account for that reason. And at the end of the day, they fall back on it. Their attention might not be 100% on the platform anymore.
Right.
But they're still there and their presence is still there. So if you want that awareness, Facebook's still going to be the most reliable place to get that biggest outreach.
That's true. So what about you, Alicia? Top three.
Top three, of course, Twitter. I am a Twitter fanatic. I love Twitter chats, if you can't tell. I'm on Twitter chats as most of the day. I love Twitter chats.
Remind me when we're done, because I want to talk to you about your Twitter chats, because I love Twitter chats, and I don't get involved as much as I used to, and maybe I need to start jumping in on some of the ones you're on.
Right. Hopefully, our community will get more involved with like things like that on Twitter, but it's a work in process. We're growing. So I'd say Twitter. My next one, I would definitely have to say Snapchat, and that's thanks to my friend Christine Guillotine. She has started the first Twitter chat for Snapchat. So now she's doing a Twitter chat to where it teaches you how to use Snapchat. And it's cool for AV because I can show in real time an event or what I'm doing at an event, what I'm running, who's performing, how we set it up, how long it took us to set it up. So it's really cool how you can storytell with Snapchat. I'm just getting on that. So it's interesting. And LinkedIn. I connect with so many people in our industry via LinkedIn opposed to Twitter, which is, it's funny. But I see most of us have, most of y'all, not saying that people in our industry are old, but older than I am. So you guys are on LinkedIn more than Twitter. So it's going to be fun to see you guys cross over more and be more active on Twitter.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm going to steal Joshua's saying and say that LinkedIn was the, the driver's license that like Facebook is now for a lot of people. And that seems to be what it is. People, you know, logged in and created themselves a LinkedIn profile. And for the most part, if they stay working at a company for 10, 20, 30 years, they don't ever have to change it. Of course, it's great to change your content and show what you're doing in life. But for the most part, people are like, I got LinkedIn, I'm covered. Whereas Twitter, you're right. There are some of the, I'm going to call them AV veterans that are on Twitter, like John Green, best guy ever. Love you, John. You know, you got Brock, you know, you have Bradford. You've got a whole bunch of people that are on Twitter that have been in AV industry forever. But it seems to be definitely a young person's game, you know, unless somebody wants to take the time to learn it. And so that's where I think some of the Twitter chats that you're participating in sort of lends its hand. We used to, back in the day, and when I say back in the day, like 3 years ago, there was a AV chat that we used to have on Twitter, which I don't think it still exists. If it does, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sort of fell apart after a while. And I did enjoy that because I would try to participate and jump in when I could. But now I'm seeing you be a part of all these other Twitter chats. So explain to me a little bit some of the different ones you participate in.
It's funny because when I first found the hashtag AV tweeps, I was like, oh man, this is cool. There's a whole bunch of us on here. And then I was like, well, there's a handful of us here. And that's when I saw that there was an AV chat. It's funny that you brought this up because I ran this by Chris. And we were talking about starting an AV Tweeps chat. So hopefully we can bring that to fruition right before we come into InfoComm. But Twitter chats are fun. They're interactive. They get you conversating with people that you can't necessarily meet face-to-face on a daily basis. And it's just full of knowledge as well. Like, you have Twitter chats about everything from health. You have social road trips. You have people who are Snapchatting their stories from one side of the country to the next because they're going to meet somebody that they met in a Twitter chat. So it's all kinds of stuff out there. Snapchat, you have Twitter chats that are about Twitter. Madeline Scalar, she's a huge social media influencer, and she was the one who got me onto Twitter chats. Her chat was Go Girls. It's basically a music platform for indie music artists, and that was the first chat that I participated in, and it was just mind-blowing that how fast it was going and how many people were actually there and communicating and sharing information. So it's really fun to see and just be a part of.
Yeah, that's my favorite part, I think, of like Twitter and all these other like Snapchat and all these platforms that we use to communicate with each other, is the fact that it's instantaneous. I mean, there's been times where I have something going on at work and I just need an answer and I can't find it because either I can't get a hold of the manufacturer or I just know it's a weird question, and I've thrown it out on Twitter for the AV Tweeps and somebody gets back to me like pretty much within a minute, and I love it. Like, and sometimes they don't have the answer, but they can help direct me. Like, and that's the beauty of the AV Twitterverse for us, is that there's so many people. The ones that are involved are willing to help usually. I mean, there might be like a 1% that somebody's just, you know, sitting there like all me. But for the most part, everybody wants to help each other. And I find it to be fascinating. Now, Joshua, do you have any kind of, you know, we're talking about AV Tweeps because that lends itself to the AV industry. Is there any, you know, social hashtag little cliques that you belong to?
I mean, they exist. I've been a part of them. I'm actually, this probably going to sound very, you know, very negative here compared to you guys. I'm not a fan of these, like, hashtags, chats. To me, it comes out very spammy on people's feeds. So to me, I'm not very entirely... It almost, to me, breaks user experience. I've even participated in them, and to me, it just doesn't feel natural to the experience. Now, granted, I'm not heavily into it, which means I'm also going to have probably not a fully educated view, but I look from a consumer point of view. So when it comes to Twitter, it's all about short bursts of quick information and value pack that way. And that's the way I've always looked at the platform to behave. Again, it could be just my industry, what I deal with, being with startups, mobile, wearable, development era, and there's 100% part of it. But I do look at it from the consumer person of what I expect when it comes to a social network and the narrative is trying to explain. And that's why I try to create content that follows that narrative, that manner. And to me, that kind of is counterintuitive to what Twitter was set up to be and be a part of.
But see, the cool thing about it is how you said you recycle content. So for instance, I was talking about the Chat Snap Twitter chat. It was initially a blog. And then she caught on to an influencer and they recycled it and turned it into a Twitter chat. Now, I do understand what you're saying if you're not involved with it, if you're just on the other end and say you don't tweet, but you see me just hashtagging for an hour of whatever, blah, 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 then maybe that is spammy. But on the other hand, I have a ton of people who follow me that will come into the chat and just be like, hey, what's this chat? This sounds cool.
So here's where the value prop comes from. What's the ratio of people that follow you to actually participate? Because, for example, I have a little over 500,000 followers. So if I'm getting 500 people to participate, that means there's 495,500 people who are getting spammed out of the ass off my Twitter account. That's insanity, right, for me and my perspective. And I look at it as a numbers game. At the end of the day, I got to produce content, and it's valuable content, and not for the purpose of pushing necessarily my own agenda versus actually giving them value. And that's something I really pride for social media. And that's where I guess I don't feel inclined for the chat. Now, if you came out of a social network, for example, which is inclined to bursts of information, lifetime conversation, which one already comes to mind, which I'll talk about in a second, then hell yeah. You know, the idea is you have to build in a place where a narrative makes sense for what it is you're trying to do. So great example. Yeah. I love Blab. I record our podcast using Blab, and it allows us to have real-time conversation using video and audio, and have a chat area so people can also contribute to that conversation, hop in, and we record our podcast in real time. So whenever you listen to our podcast on iTunes, you're actually hearing a live audience because we're actually taking real people. Like our very last episode had 900 people listening in real time as we record the episode of the podcast, which then was redistributed using iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Google Play, on YouTube. That's a narrative that was built for that, right? That was built for communication, that burst, that hour, 2 hours of content. So that makes sense to me, but I'm always looking at it. And again, Twitter could change. You know, Twitter's already changed a lot since I was a user back in 2008. Right? It's not the same thing as it was then. And, you know, what you guys are going to maybe is where Twitter is going, since Twitter needs to do something to fix itself. But right now, I look at the playing field they set up, and to me, the playing field doesn't make sense to do mass production of tweets for hours of a lot of people for a hashtag where only a minority is going to be actually digesting that content the right way.
So, well, since you're a numbers guy, you should check out the numbers on some of this stuff. And I would like to see how you would interpret the numbers to make it make more sense.
That would be pretty cool. No, I'm 100% sure people wouldn't be doing it if it didn't make sense from a value prop, right? Obviously, but I'm also thinking it's part of the industry too. For example, the AV industry, you're mentioning that there's a lot of older individuals, right, that are part of it. You're kind of the younger new mold. Well, to a lot of older individuals, that narrative could very likely make sense, and you're playing that game in order to get their eyeballs, their impressions, and having to get into your ecosystem. That makes perfect sense to me. But I look at also my industry in particular, especially the techie world, right, when it comes to true mobile web software tech. No, these are early adopters that were on Twitter, right? These are early adopters that are using apps now like Peach and Musical.ly and Juke.ly and things like this that half the people I talk about in the real world would have no idea what the hell they are. And 12 months from now, they're going to be fucking huge, just like how people were using Peach a couple months ago, just like I was on Snapchat 4 years ago, right? Before people even knew what the hell Snapchat was or they follow us for sexting, right? That was what people thought Snapchat is. And also the same thing, narratives are changing all the time. Facebook used to not have a newsfeed once upon a time. You remember this thing called The Wall? That was a thing that used to exist on Facebook. Snapchat used to not share stories, right? It used to be just sharing pictures back and forth. Twitter used to not have lists. It used to not have favorite accounts, things like this. Like, that stuff has changed. So, in 5 years from now, I guarantee the whole playing field is going to differ again. And I, like I said, I don't disagree with what you're doing there because there's so much value with it. It's just you have to be in the right place, the right setting to be effective and have the right audience that's going to make sure that's the right value proposition for them.
Now you got me thinking if that's why some people unfollow.
I tweet a lot, but it's not sudden bursts like a machine gun, like that's not happening, right? You go, there's probably 30 tweets a day, but spread out. The idea is Twitter's about quick bursts of feedback and notes and like content that's valuable to you. But that's it, quick. Think about how quickly you move on to the next tweet. So when you have this long form, it doesn't make sense in an environment like Twitter. Now, does it make sense on Facebook? Yeah. Does it make sense on Tumblr? Yeah. In fact, there is the rumor Twitter one day is probably going to get rid of the 140-character limit. Jack Dorsey's been pretty open about that.
Yeah.
For those who's not listening, he's the founder and now current CEO of Twitter. That happens, all of a sudden this platform could completely change. And could have a live conversation thread going on stream in real time. Like, I wouldn't put it past them. All of a sudden, the name of the game has changed, and that narrative makes sense.
And I think they're starting to sort of go in that direction, because I noticed that when you do the direct messages now on Twitter, it could be the 140 characters as well. So you
more than that, how many people now, when you share a link, adds to your tweet with the link, and that didn't exist once upon a time. So that's the thing also, I think, for anyone listening, whether you're an AV, you're an entrepreneur, you're just someone that wants to get awareness, is understanding the name of the platform you're on. You have to play by the rules of what makes sense to user behavior, but also realize user behavior on platforms isn't stagnant. It's every part of the evolution to it, and it's always growing and changing.
Totally. That was really good info, because it was like after a Twitter chat, say it's just about Twitter, I'll have maybe 3 unfollowers, but then I'll have 25 new followers. So I guess it depends on if the content is valuable to them from each chat. But I'm so active in so many chats, so I can't really tell the ratio.
A-B test, Are you familiar with A-B testing? You know what that is?
Right.
So A-B test, like try just one Twitter chat, see what it is. Try another Twitter chat, see what it is. Say Twitter chat 10 times, by the way. It's hard to say. but to me right now, with what I do, and Twitter is such an asset and complementary piece to our marketing strategy, how I get more following, how we grow our personal brand or brand overall, it doesn't make sense. I've tried it. It's not right. But like I said, doesn't mean it's not good. It's because I believe that for me doesn't mean it's the same thing for you.
Totally.
And you know, that's one thing I always try to communicate when I talk to people about this stuff. It's like, just because I disagree doesn't mean I disagree in your situation, disagree for my own situation.
Right. Every platform and industry is working different on each different platform. So it's interesting to see.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because that's how I found you, Joshua, was Twitter, because, you know, I love Twitter. And, you know, it, for anybody listening, at the end of the show, I'm going to have everybody tell you what their Twitter handles are so that you can start to follow them. And, you know, the reason I started following Joshua is I just liked what he did. It was, like he said, concise, to the point. You know, he'll throw out, you know, like it could be 30 tweets a day, but it's going to be like a one sentence thing. It's going to make you think, it's going to make you do something. And then, hey, you know, he might try to throw in a little promo. Hey, check out our new blog, check out our podcast, do this. So he's giving you content, yet he's then also bringing you back in. It's almost like the 3-4-1 ratio.
Yeah, it's probably 90% of my tweet. It's are all value props. How are we giving Verona inspiration, motivation, knowledge, or resource or background in the world that I'm in? Better 10% is getting them into our infrastructure. The part of it is, if I build a brand of 500,000 people and now I can capitalize on 1% of that becoming a customer. Keep in mind, for our average client with us, they're usually starting at a $50,000 budget and up. We have 500,000 followers. So we bring in 1%. That's 500 people paying $50,000. You can imagine a multi-million-dollar business in revenue per year is growing off of a Twitter account. And we've done millions of dollars of revenue just for Twitter. That doesn't even impact Snapchat this year. I literally did a Snapchat story about how we did $250,000 of revenue in a single day using Snapchat. And then did a Snapchat about the $250,000 in revenue using Snapchat, which turned into $1.2 million in revenue on Snapchat. So the idea is, you have to understand all the different platforms, how to leverage them, what makes sense, the type of content you're putting out there, and understand the different audience. Our Snapchat audience is significantly younger than it is on Twitter, which is significantly younger than it is on Facebook. And you also have to understand what it is. Facebook, I'm catering more to executives, Fortune 500s, CEOs. Twitter, the early stage startups, VCs, investors, the people who are sick and tired of their cubicle office, and they're ready to take the leap in entrepreneur. Snapchat, the people who are my age right now and 5-6 years from now are going to be the decision makers, and teaching them about our ecosystem now. So eventually, when they become that decision maker, they've already known about us for years, and that they already have the trust of our brand. And now they're ready to say, Josh, I'm ready to work with you guys. So, and that's me investing 5 years from now today for the next 5 years. It's the same thing there.
Sweet. So, Josh, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
88, but I'm actually 23, so.
For everybody who can't see Josh, he's a good-looking 88.
Benjamin's Button disease. It's a real thing. Spreading awareness one day at a time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, Alicia, I don't know. You could say your age. You don't have to, but obviously you're in the millennials, and I border – millennials. I really prefer to put myself as Gen X, but I can sort of be a millennial because I'm 37. I kind of, you know, I have Gen X tendencies, but like then I, like all the stuff we're talking about tonight, that's what gets me excited. Like I almost am sort of millennial in the fact that I want instantaneous, I want answers now, and I want to move forward. I don't want to sit and plot and think. There's times for that, sure, but a lot of times I just want to know the answer and move on so that I can get on to the next thing. And that's sort of how I see you a little bit with getting involved with Twitter the way you have, and, you know, throwing yourself into the industry, which is awesome. And, you know, through LinkedIn and through Twitter, you've indicated also you want to embrace this industry. You want to make it your own because you're studying for your CTS. Now, have you set a date yet for when you're going to take the test?
I have not set a date yet. Oh, and by the way, I just turned 27 earlier this month. So yeah, so it's been a journey. But yes, my CTS, I have not set a date yet. I am not the best test taker. I have never been the best test taker. So I think it's more of a mental thing that's going on in my head. But I have a ton of people just by, like you said, I've kind of thrown myself into the community and reached out to certain people. So I have an awesome community of people who are helping me from all over. I have people in the UK. We go back and forth and switch questions because they're studying for it as well. So it's fun because even though I'm studying for a test, I'm meeting new people outside of the country, all over on the other side of the US, and we're making it fun to take our careers to the next level within what we love to do. So it's fun.
Good. I applaud you for that. As you know, I have my CTS as well, Joshua, and for anybody listening, a CTS is a certified technology specialist. It's a certification that you can get in the AV industry that, it's based upon, the knowledge you've achieved over your course of time being in the industry, and then you test for it, and show that you have the aptitude. Then there's other layers of the test as well, whether you're, an installer or a designer. So those are next graded up. I am wanting to go for my CTSD so I can really be like a super uber nerd. I have not set my test date for that yet, but it's something that I'm working towards. And I know I owe you some more time, Alicia, to help you study for your CTS, because I owe anybody who is a part of the Women of Infocom network. I've been a slacker, and I apologize. I'm gonna get right back on that to help you guys study. Because it's important having community, and that's like what, even though we haven't said it till now, that's what we want, whether we really think we want that. That's Snapchat, that's Twitter, that's Facebook, that's LinkedIn. We want to be able to reach out and know that somebody else is in the same scenario that we are, or they've been through it and can help give us insight, or maybe we can then turn around and be that mentor and help somebody else through a situation we've been in. And that's huge, especially now with all the technology we have, because you're right, you may not meet any of those people in the UK, or maybe you will, sometime if they ever come over to Infocom, or you happen to, get sent on job site over there. And then it's awesome because you have all this knowledge and background of knowing them. Now you get to be with them in person and learn even more. And that's my favorite part about social media, is just the outreach of people you can connect with.
Totally. It's been I love our community. It's growing, and it's going to get way cooler.
So we haven't talked about wearables yet. Let's talk about wearables. And I wear a wearable, I have a Fitbit, which I love. My Fitbit, I don't think loves me because I don't always hit my goals, but I think it's pretty cool. I enjoy it. There's a lot to be said for wearables. How do you guys feel about that? Joshua, I'm going to say you're probably, even if you don't wear one, you probably are for it since you helped develop apps.
I took them off before the call. I wear two actually at a time.
You're hardcore.
Yeah, so I have an Apple Watch that I've worn since the day it came out. I actually owned a Fitbit before that and a Jawbone before that, and those are superior when it comes to health stuff. Just because we develop off the Apple Watch, I love wearing it. Plus, I always wear watches. And then this is a recent device, here's another Boxer one right here. Been wearing a Pavlok, which is a new type of wearable, which it's usually a great conversation piece, which is meant to break bad habits. So are you guys familiar with Pavlov's dog, the idea of when he does something good, you give him a treat. When he does something bad, he gets a negative behavior in order to teach him to do the good behavior and rebel. The idea of a Pavlov, which actually open up, well, there's a lot of stuff. This one I'm shipping out to an employee of mine. Basically, you do a bad habit, you get shocked, and it teaches you not to do that bad habit. So, for example, if that's biting nails, or maybe open the fridge after 10 p.m., or waking, if you don't go wake up at 7 a.m. when your alarm goes off, it shocks you. And it's not just a shock. I mean, this is a aggressive, holy shit, I'm being electrocuted.
So how does it know that, you tell it what your bad habit is, but how does it know doing that?
So for the ones that you can track, alarm clock, fridge, stuff like that, you can use the app If This Then Else and be like, if I do this, then shock me. And you set it for that. For the ones you can't track, for example, like thinking negativity or something like that, you can manually just set it as soon as you do it, and you're shocking yourself. So this has been a fun experiment that we actually, it was funny enough, we had on our podcast, the CEO of Blab, Sean Purry, who brought it up to us. And on the podcast, we dropped $300, me and my two co-hosts, literally on the moment, and bought three of these things. And it's been fun. But I also own a Android Wear watch. Like I said, I have like two different Jawbones, a Fitbit. So I'm very much in a wearable ecosystem. And, you don't see it right now, but usually half my left arm is covered with wearables.
What about you, Alicia? Do you do any wearables? Do you like wearables? Do you think they're awful? What's your thoughts?
I'm stuck on this watch that's going to shock me for my bad habits. I don't smoke cigarettes, but I know a ton of people like on our cruise when we go out and we're on these long road trips or whatever, and they're like, they're trying to get off their cigarettes. So if they smoke a cigarette, would it shock them?
So I do would have to set it manually, so you have to do it yourself. But yeah, the first thing on here is like for smokers, like that's one of the things they push it for. They actually say the first day you get this, every time you forcibly take a cigarette, and every time you like take a huff, you shock yourself every single time until you're like, I'm done with a cigarette. Yeah, but here's the thing. There's so many people online, you read it, that said they quit smoking within 5 days using this and not even having like the withdrawals, because the shocks teach your body like that's what's happening every time you do it.
How much electricity is this sending to you? Like, is this like a police taser? Is it like a taser I can go buy?
It's not a police taser. So hold on, let me read.
My guess is it's probably similar to like a dog collar.
But let's see. Bear with me. I believe it is. So hold on, it's going to tell me right here somewhere.
That's really cool.
It's actually interesting that people are actually truthful and shocking themselves if they're.
So if you're dropping $100 on this, you better be truthful. Like, why?
True.
Else
are
you
$100? Yeah.
What is it? Does it not tell me? 14 volts.
Okay.
So I'm not going to die or anything.
It doesn't do like long lasting pain. You don't see like a shock on you. But in the second, you're like, what? I'm at the point now where I just grimace when I do it like this. But the first few times I did it, I literally would jump and scream fuck as loud as possible when I did it.
I'm going to have to look that up. That's interesting. Okay, but wearables. I'm a Samsung user, so I definitely have I like the Samsung watches. I like the sneakers, the Under Armour sneakers that actually keep track of your workouts, your step count, and things like that. That's interesting to see. I'm not against it. I like what they're doing with the virtual reality stuff as far as event technology is going, and how they're including the virtual reality into actual live events and creating a different user or experience while you're there. I think that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I wear the Fitbit, which is pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of the there's so many applications out there for like, we can talk fitness, if you're doing all that stuff and you tie it into to different events, and it's awesome. Like, I probably have like 10 different fitness applications, and at least half of them tie into my Fitbit. So I know at any given point, if I'm like cycling or if I'm running, that if I hit one of those, then I don't have to worry about manually feeding it back into my Fitbit, because that's what it is for me. It's all about ease of use. And I would assume that's why most wearables were created, is that so you don't have to think about it, that it's part of you. It's almost like you're semi-cyborg, and you could just go do your thing, and it's taken care of for you.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Did you see what happened with the virtual reality today? I mean, this is kind of weird. I'm not going to – but Pornhub actually started – has a virtual reality platform that launched today.
Yes. It was something that they want the people to watch it or something.
Porn finds a way.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't check it out personally, but I was like, really?
You know you did. Come on.
I didn't check it out, but I was like,
this is a safe zone.
No judgment.
It's taking it to another level here. Like, really? That was interesting to see. And
listen, I tell people this all the time. If you're an investor, you should be tracing the porn industry, because porn is always the first thing to go into a new tech sector before anything else. So if you're an investor, I swear to God, follow porn. Porn will lead you to billions of dollars. I'm not saying invest in porn, but if porn's getting to VR, you should be lining up your wallets to invest in anything virtual reality related.
I agree.
Porn's knows where the market goes before the market knows where it wants to go. It's the greatest predictor of where things are going to go.
I mean, because right now, virtual reality is sticking within like video games, and they're trying to take it into entertainment, and now bringing it to porn is kind of crazy. But like, I want to see when it turns into like a hologram.
So here's the thing. VR, I tell people this all the time, people are overestimating how quick adoption will be. It will be adopted, and I know for a fact in my lifetime it's going to happen. It's not going to happen next year. Virtual reality is not the current iPhone, where within a year everyone has a smartphone. But 10 years from now, absolutely. I think within the next 20, 30 years, you're going to see the takeover of VR. 3D printing for everything. I mean, to the point where one day you're going to be able to 3D print your food. I had this ethical conversation with someone 2 days ago who was a vegan. Like, would you order food, like meat, it was 3D printed from never actually animal, but it was printed with animal DNA with the idea of it's replicating meat? And he said, absolutely. That's going to happen. You guys ever watch Back to the Future 2 where they like puts this little box in the microwave and prints out a full pizza? That will happen in our lifetime. I'm not talking about the printable, but the idea of one day your refrigerator doesn't have food in it anymore. you go on, you pay per meal, you pay per go for meal, and it prints out already cooked meal ready to go for you. That's going to happen in a lifetime. You know, Hyperloop, with to go from literally New York City to LA in 3 hours, that's going to happen in our lifetime. So, you know, these are things that are going to happen that sound like science fiction. But again, that's part of what I do for a living, is identify where we're going to go before everyone knows where we're going to go and make sure I'm capitalizing on where we're going to go. So when people get there, I already have the infrastructure in place that's going to give them what they want.
That is, you're absolutely right. Things are going to change, and we live in an awesome time. And the people after us, like Alicia, you got, you know, 10 years more after me when I'm gone, you're going to have some awesomeness when I'm gone too for the next 10 years. So I want to ask you guys now, you know, what's a favorite movie you've watched recently? And are there any movies coming out that you're super excited to see? For instance, I'm a comic book fan, and you know, Batman versus Superman is taking two of some of my favorite comics.
I'm actually seeing the early release tomorrow at 6 o'clock. So.
There you go. See, that's why you're the best ever, Joshua.
I actually just saw this great movie 2 days ago, Burn After Reading, for the first time, which is a bit older. It's from 2008.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was brilliant. I was caught off guard how well wrote it was and just how violent it got. For me, not expecting anything, I thought it was just going to be like a stupid slapstick dark comedy. You know, next thing you know, people are getting shot left and right, and it's just over-the-top plot for something so stupid. So that was a very enjoyable movie. But I don't watch as much. I usually, well, here's the thing. Instead of watching movies, I really don't like losing 2-3 hours of my time. But when I do want to watch, I want to absorb a lot. So I'll binge watch. Like, I watched all of House of Cards the day it came out, but I watched it all in one day. And then I won't go weeks without absorbing any content. So usually when I'm doing something like that, I'm going to absorb hours on end. Like, just about my personality, I'm either going all in or I really don't care.
How about you, Alicia? Any movies you've seen or you want to see?
Of course, Deadpool was great. I'm not a big comic person, but I do keep up with, like, Avengers and stuff like that. So that was cool to see because I love X-Men. But right now, The Intern was very awesome. I love that movie because it kind of reflected me in my daily life. For one, I'm like the one of the only female in my department. It's only two of us. And then I'm the youngest. And one of the guys that I learned from on a daily basis, he's like 64 years old. So I call him Robert De Niro now. Like, because it just reminds me so much of the movie and learning from experience. That's kind of where I am in my life right now. So I related to it a lot.
I recently saw that movie as well, and I was pleasantly surprised with it because I thought it actually did have some really good, you know, information to come out of it, and the fact of, you know, you can't, you know, things have changed and we use technology and things are quick, but you can't discredit people that have been doing this for years and years and years. Maybe the way they do it is different, but their insight to things is going to be, you know, usually correct. Just like Joshua just said, follow the porn industry. Yeah, he's right, because you know what? They've been guessing correctly or predicting correctly for how many years now?
They're not even guessing. Listen, they're not guessing. They're using data. They, you know, they're a business. They're not even billion. I'm willing to argue they're a closer $1 trillion business. What was the stat I recently saw? That 60% of the internet is actually pornography. Like, that's incredible. It's obviously on the grand scale. So listen, they're not guessing. They're using statistics, and the rest of the world is catching up when they figure out and they prove market traction. Here's a great example. You ready? Another proof. Grindr opened this whole new way of connecting people. Grindr, you know, the man-to-man, woman-on-woman app, you know, that was meant for hookups. And soon after, Tinder happened, Bumble happened, Match and OkCupid all pivoted their strategies. And online dating, everything's changed forever because of it. Did the whole new hookup culture, right? Listen, again, that Grindr, it was originated off another thing, pornography. An idea of that, like, so you just have to follow where the market's going and identify it before everyone else gets there, before it's saturated, and capitalize on it.
So now we're at the sad part of the show where we've got to wrap this up, but before I do, I want both Alicia and Joshua, quick, if you want to give out your Twitter handle, because anybody who's listening to this should be following you, even if it's only because I say so, and follow them for a week and tell me that I'm not right and that you should be following these two. So Alicia, what's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is @thesmoothfactor. It's @thesmoothfactor, the smooth factor. That's me on every platform.
Whoop, whoop.
That was smooth. And as for me, you can find me on Pornhub. No, just kidding. You can find me on the username Das Joshua, DASJOSHUA on every platform except Snapchat. Snapchat's just my full name, Joshua Davidson, because some asshole took my username before I ever signed up.
Oh, man, that person's the worst. So I thank you, both of you. I want to thank Joshua Davidson, and I want to thank Alicia Henley for joining us today. I love this conversation. You know, we talked a little bit, wearables, talked a lot about social media platforms, how we utilize it, how we see it going, which I think is invaluable because it's always changing, and it's a great way to connect with our friends, peers, and others that we need to be connected with. So thanks again. This was Tech Chaos, and I am your host, AV Krista on the Twitterverse, also known as Krista Bender in the real world. Thank you for listening.